Michelle Huell is no D.B. Cooper.
Well, that remains to be seen.
No, he's no D.B. Cooper.
Okay.
How'd you like this episode, Michelle?
Mike, I hate to fangirl over the stuff we podcast, but I don't know how to not fangirl over Better Call Saul. There's so little to complain about in this series that whenever I read the complaints from people, it's almost humorous. You know that we don't mind, like, ragging on a TV show. We've done it a bunch of times, but if I had anything negative to say about this at all, it would be that, and this is just overall, not this specific episode, but we kind of touched on the commercials last week. And so I went back and I sat down and I watched the commercials. I made note of every commercial. And there were 37 commercials in this 1 hour plus show. And I was kind of blown away by that number. And I'm going to kind of date me again. But do you remember back when cable first was like getting big and its selling point was that it was commercial free TV?
No, Michelle, I was born during the DirecTV era.
No better than that. But who would have ever thought we would pay to have the television station and still have to sit through the commercials? It's just crazy. 37 in 1 hour.
Well, to your earlier point of being a fan girl, fanboy, fangirl, mm-hmm. I was thinking, how is it so easy to rip The Affair? We did our podcast on The Affair, and it became like habitual by me, especially just to rip that. I would look at those episodes and find ways. Okay, how am I going to rip this scene? How am I going to make fun of this? How am I going to throw shade over here, over there? So that was kind of my mode for The Affair, and right. I think for this series, Better Call Saul, I'm thinking, like, I can't rip that. This is Better Call Saul. Like, I can't, it's hard to criticize the show, even when I think I should be criticizing it. So I kind of disagree that I'm not just a total fanboy that, or maybe I'm not. I don't know which way it is. But I guess I'm saying that it's difficult for me to be almost honest. Like, there's things I want to criticize, but I think, God, I shouldn't criticize this. This is Better Call Saul.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you should criticize it. You should bring it up because I don't, like I just said, I don't like to fangirl an episode or a series, certainly. I don't even like to fangirl an episode. So if I'm not seeing something, I definitely want to see it. In this, the fact that you were right last week in that, well, a couple things. Actually, first, that Schweikert and Coakley did represent Sandpiper. That was correct. And I was wrong in that. I was saying HHM did, but Schweikert and Coakley were Sandpiper's attorneys and HHM were the resident's attorneys. And that's where I got confused with that. Also,
yeah, because it was Sandpiper versus the residents. And so that's the adversarial right. relationship with Schweikert.
Right. Right. And for some reason, my mind didn't wrap around that last week. And the warehouse, you mentioned that you didn't think that the German housing warehouse was the laundry. And I was completely sure it was. And you and I even messaged back and forth over the week about that. And I went back and looked up the laundry from Breaking Bad and got some pictures of that. And it's not identical, but it's so close to.
Yeah, they have a shockingly similar view of the entrance to both the laundry and the warehouse. And they have kind of a blue overhang type garage parking to the entrance to it. And they look really similar, but you can kind of tell that they're not. And clearly the inside, there's no way that laundry was that vast of a space as the warehouse.
Well, it's true, but it was so hard to tell in the shots that we've gotten of the inside of the laundry until we really, like, went into it and looked at it. But we find out in this one, and I think if I'm going to be critical about the episode, I think they should have done that. because how much better would it have been just to house them there? I think that would have made it even more claustrophobic and what have you. But that was, you know, something else that...
Oh, they're going to be fine, Michelle. Those guys love each other.
Yeah, I'm not getting that vibe from them so much. So what did you think
this episode
about?
Was written by Allison Tatlock, Michelle, who wrote episodes for In Treatment, which was kind of the precursor to The Affair. The people that produced The Affair were connected to the show In Treatment. And she also wrote an episode or episodes for Halt and Catch Fire. So those...
Yeah, I saw that.
Those cross paths with our endeavors in our podcast network of those different shows, The Affair and Halt and Catch Fire, which was a really good show.
Yeah, but how funny, because The Affair is like definitely not as well written as these shows, Halt and Catch
Fire.
Well,
she wrote for In Treatment, which was pretty well written, I thought.
I don't know if I saw that.
Gabriel Byrne and...
I didn't see it.
That was Hagai Levy, who Sarah Treem connected with, and that's how she got connected to Hagai Levy, was in Treatment. And then he started The Affair with her, but then he left after season two, which most people started to think was when the show got bad after season two.
Right. Well, much like we may be seeing Kim leave here. What did you think about this?
Well,
the separation of Kim and...
We know she's going to leave at some point.
I know, but it's sad. It was like this... Okay, again, fangirl, but the cinematography of this, the way this stuff is shot, is just... It's just remarkable to me. They begin with this, like, divided screen... And I just don't think they could have better, first of all, shown the evolution of what was going on between Kim and Jimmy.
Well, so Michelle, before we spoil what the name of the episode "Something Stupid" means, let's talk about what we thought it might mean. So. And what it might still mean, I mean, okay. Something stupid, the guy hits the post in the tunnel, not paying attention because he doesn't have enough R&R. That was kind of stupid. Huel hitting the cop without knowing who he's hitting. I mean, these are all the things that are something stupid that these people may end up doing that we don't really know the resolution of them yet. And then Jimmy trying to save Huel, what's he going to do to help save? They sound like he might be doing something to compromise that cop. In trial or in his background or something to get him in trouble.
Right.
Whatever Kim's office supplies plan is that, you know, could involve doing something stupid to help Jimmy.
Right.
Whatever the plan might be to get the boys in the tunnel some R&R. Who knows what they're going to do to help that situation out. But really, you're complimenting this scene, and this was a cool opening montage of shots, but it's the song, Something Stupid.
Right. And the song is really about one person who likes somebody else and the other person who's kind of distanced themselves from that person. So that's telling in that way. Along those same thoughts that you were just having, though, Jimmy having that conversation with Rich Schweikert in that group and just kind of throwing everything under the bus, that was kind of stupid, too.
So how do you think they came up with the name? Do you think they did the show and they thought, okay, what are we going to call this one? Well, that song was kind of neat. You know, how do you think they come up with the name of the episode? Because the name of the song at the beginning, I mean, it's cool. It's a perfect song for this scene. And we'll talk about the scene, but why name the whole episode Something Stupid?
Because there's so much stupid going on in it, I guess. Look, these people are clever. And there's rarely just like, unless it's a specific thing, a lot of times there's many meanings, I think, in the episode. Even last week in Pinata, the Pinata was the place that they were doing, the Pinata factory, and then they turned the guys, the boys, the crooks, into pinatas, so to speak. they kind of do that a lot on this. They make it where you think one way. Because as we got to the scene where Saul was talking about, okay, we're going to do something, you know, maybe house these phones or whatever they were talking about in the pinata place or outside. I don't know. We never really figured it out. But we I thought at that point that we'd come across the title of the episode. But, of course, then we find out later on that that wasn't it at all. It was more about the guys. So I think they do that a lot. What do you think about it?
I don't know. I can't answer it. I mean, in season one of Breaking Bad, it was like a message in the titles of all the different episodes. But I don't know. I don't know how they come up with it or what it means, or maybe it doesn't mean anything. It's just kind of a cool that you're right. There was a lot of stupid planning. I mean, smart writing, but the planning of these people to get out of these situations looks like they may be doing some stupid things to. That won't help them long term.
Well, and also if you think about it with them, the titles seem to be the main maybe point, the big thing that happens in these episodes. And I don't know if that's true across the board. I've never really thought about it before. But the pinata scene last week with the boys, I think that's, you know, arguably one of the better scenes that they've done. It's certainly something that stuck in my mind as horrific. And in this episode, Something Stupid, I think that beginning part was much more telling. I mean, it just did so much for the episode. It was definitely, in my view anyway, the main part of this episode.
Do you listen to the Insider podcast, Michelle?
I did last week. I don't normally, and I haven't for this one because I haven't had time. Did you?
It's actually a horrible podcast. I mean, here we are. We're, you know, a lot of people probably think that about what we're doing, but it's not a very good podcast. They stray way off point, like a lot of times. And Kelly Dixon is just horrible. She interrupts. Her audio is way off. Her audio is louder than everyone else. She's not on set with them anymore because she's doing other projects. But she interrupts everybody and. It's just a horrible. There's like six people in the podcast. They're all trying to get their word in edgewise, but it's ridden with gems of like interesting things. So it's worth it just to listen to the things that you hear, that like the background of how I wish that's all they would talk about is like how they technically produced the show and why they wrote things this way and how they did this scene technically and why they how they set up this, you know, crane this way and whatever. But in the pinata scene, the guys could only be hung upside down for like a minute and 30 seconds. And they had to, for health and safety, they had to be put back upright so that they weren't upside down for more than a minute and a half, which is kind of interesting to me. I don't know why, but I thought that was pretty cool to know that.
Well, because that scene was a little long, and to think about how that would have to be shot, I did hear that part because you recommended that I listen to that, and they were talking about that wasn't once they started shooting. That was once they started lifting the guys. So imagine how that was. They said that they had stunt people that filled in when they could, and they were able to keep them inverted for a little bit longer, but very little bit longer. I'm going to complain just a tiny little bit about these insider podcasts because, and this has happened on other series. It's not specific to Better Call Saul, but if they have to go on a podcast and explain a scene, and they don't do that so much in this, because that is a cool piece of information about the Pinata Boys and all that. But then it's no good. There's been many shows that we've done that you listen to an insider podcast on it, it explains it, and then acts like, well, of course that's the way it was. But nobody got that, or very few people got it in that way. And, I mean, just do a voiceover on the TV show if that's what you have to do to get your message across. That stuff drives me crazy. If there's an insider thing where they have to explain it, then they're not doing their job on the show, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think that's true of this show. But
no,
I agree
no,
with
I
that.
Don't either.
I just
I
like the
either.
Gems that they have every now and then. Like who would have ever known that they're hanging the guys upside down? They just didn't. Okay, guys going to be about 10 minutes. So hang in there. No, it's right. Like every 90 seconds they got to flip them back upright to keep them
right. Well, sure, and that's a really cool like little piece of knowledge. And you think about how hard this was to film. They also talked about out in the trailer that they had pre-recorded all the scenes or recorded separately, not necessarily pre-recorded, all the scenes that they were watching on their monitors out there. And they said there was like, 20 monitors, 24, I don't know, something. But they had done all that, and each of those had to have their own like shots, and they had to do it and take it, and how much work that was. And that was really, really interesting too. I like stuff like that. I love to be able to watch that. But I have like a distaste in my mouth for the Insider podcast because of what I was talking about just a little bit ago.
So. Yeah, I just hate the blathering on that they have with six people. And a lot of it's like, who cares? I don't care about Kelly Dixon being in New York and what the weather's like. And she thinks it's so interesting. And it's just like nobody freaking cares. You know, I like how they explain like the shredder, like the video shot, the shot of the shredder from upside down, like you're talking about the coin going in the slot. They mm-hmm. explain how they do that type of stuff. That's interesting.
Right.
Or why they wrote a motivation of a character. That's interesting. I could care less about Kelly Dixon. Anyway, so Insider podcast. You should listen to it and check it out, and if you like that kind of technical stuff, but.
Yeah, as long as they're not having to explain a scene, and that's where my disconnect comes in, and I'm like, I get what I get out of watching the episode, and if the writer, director, or whatever has to explain it to me by me going and listening to something after that, of course, that's kind of what, well, I don't guess we're explaining it. But that we're just discussing our take on it. But I can't stand that. It's just really one of my pet peeves. So.
So Seppenwiller, somebody said that during this montage of the split that they were side by side at first, and then they were back to back at the end of the shot, the montage.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch that?
I did catch that. And in the beginning of it, they were able to cross over this barrier. Also, we see Jimmy pouring her wine, and then her, when they're in bed, she throws her leg over him, and they cross the barrier. And at the end, I'm not even sure that the scenes were supposed to be at the same time. We see Jimmy lying in bed alone, and Kim comes and gets in bed, but then she blacks out. Her whole side blacks out, and Jimmy's just laying there with his eyes open. I thought it was just perfectly done. It showed us, first of all, we got this time jump that, you know, everybody's been talking about how slow everything's been so slow, and it has been slow. We've only seen like 2 months pass up until this episode from the middle, I think, of season 3.
Well, and this episode is slow. I mean, that's I'll take your advice and say some things I don't like. That this is slow. This season has been kind of slow. You know, they're moving ahead. They did the time jump, but we knew they were going to have trouble in the tunnel, building the lab under the laundry. We knew that was going to be trouble. I don't know. I mean, I kind of want to see. I want to get some stuff going here.
Really? You're feeling like that too?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I guess that's fair. I see why people are having that. To me, it's like, I don't know, it's just like this, you know, dinner, and it's just perfect, and you just are savoring every bite.
Well, that's the problem with what I was saying. This show is such, it's just such video candy that whatever they do with the plot, it's fun to watch. They could show Jimmy going to the hot dog hut for lunch, and it would be interesting just because of the way they shoot it. And, you know, it's just, it's all interesting, but the plot, I think, is slow.
Yeah. Well, yes. I guess I agree. I don't know, though. It's just, every Monday night when this comes on, I am like so busy, even like until 9 o'clock. I've got like a lot of like my routine. I'm doing all this stuff, and I try to get everything done ahead of time so I can sit down, think about it for a little bit, get some notes made.
All that CrossFit stuff you do.
My CrossFit. How'd you know? Don't no. But so I sit down with it and I get my computer ready and everything, and I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, I've got 500 other things I got to be doing, and my mind is racing. And it comes on, and within 2 minutes, across the board, every time, they have sucked me in, and I am taking notes wildly and madly and pausing it and thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe they did this. And at the end of it, first of all, it feels like it goes by in about 14 minutes. And at the end of it, I just want more. So I find myself sitting up later than I should, reading some of the reviews about it. I go into next week's episodes and I see some clips they have on it. I just can't get enough of it. It feels like it just flies by to me because it is just so well done.
That's how I feel, Michelle, after I listen to the West Coast Project podcast.
Right, that too. That's what I was going to say. But anyway, we do start off this episode with those split screens, and we see that all this time has passed and or is passing. And yeah, they start out, Jimmy is like putting the toothpaste on her toothbrush, and by the end of it, they're brushing their teeth alone. We're seeing this slow, excruciating, like, disconnect. And I think 8 months goes by in this, and it's just, it's painful. It's painful to watch.
Yeah, it's painful. So so we know they're going to separate at some point, I think, right? Unless everything's leading to that. We don't really need to see 3 minutes of, although it's visual candy again, to watch it. We don't really need to know that. We already know that.
Yeah, well, sure, we know it, but first of all, I think this show has to do its, it has to stand on its own. And, you know, if there was no Breaking Bad, we wouldn't know it. And maybe the people who haven't watched Breaking Bad, I can't imagine, but, you know, they wouldn't know it. But it's just, they have to show us the disconnect. And I just think I just cannot imagine that they could do it any better. We saw that Jimmy even got business cards made up for the phone, what would you call it? Business? I don't know. That he's doing.
Yeah, it's a business.
And did you know that you can actually call Saul? Did you know that? Did you call the number on the business card?
No.
You can call the number on the business card. And do you want me to call it and play it?
If you can do it quick.
Well, I can do it as quick as my phone pulls up. Hang on, I'll put it on speaker.
Here's the pitch. The man's not helping you, so stop helping the man. Want to stay unknown? I've got your phone. I'm hustling down on 3rd Street, so drop by for your supply. Need to call? Bye from Saul.
Nice.
Is that great? That is so great. And not only that, but because of that, I started thinking about the Saul Goodman attorney phone number. And you can call that one, and it's for Saul Goodman, the attorney.
Yeah, they think of everything.
I mean, yeah, and I just think that's so great. Anyway, we see Kim and she's setting up her office, and we see Jimmy and he's basically just selling his burner phones and biding his time. But Kim's like really professional. She gets her cast off. Things are moving forward for her, and it seems like Jimmy's just kind of stuck. Kim starts getting those Mesa Verde awards for opening new branches. The little glass
trophies. Yeah, she has a bunch of them starting to stack up.
Right. And we find out that it's now January of 04. And Jimmy's file gets put in the completed filing cabinet. And after that, we see Jimmy eating dinner alone. He's eating cereal, where when it began, they were eating meals together with wine. It went from meals with wine to meals with coffee, like a coffee drink, it looked like, to eating alone and Kim eating at the office.
Right.
It was just really sad. I thought it was terribly sad. This slow, I just pictured this sticky Band-Aid being slowly pulled off for that whole thing. It was awful. But then we go to Jimmy in that commercial property, and you think he's pitching it to Kim, right? About this will be your office and we'll put a nice little receptionist over here and we'll have a Keurig, but he's not. He's pitching it to Huel.
Yeah, what's the point of this scene? He'll be more impressed with a glass tower than the homey house office that Saul or Jimmy's pitching. But what was the point? He's got to pitch it to Kim? He's practicing?
I think so, yeah. Kind of like in the song that we started off with about something stupid. It's about kind of trying to figure out what you're going to say and how you're going to pitch this to somebody, how you're going to, I don't know,
get it. Right, but we know that's a lost cause, right? Why would Kim ever go into a house, tiny little comfy, cozy lawyer house business when she's got what she's got?
Well, because that's what they had talked about doing.
Yeah, I guess.
That was the goal of once Jimmy got done, once he was done with his probation, could get reinstated as an attorney, that was their plan. And, of course, I think when Kim met him at the restaurant and told him about wanting to go in with Schweikert, then I think that was the end of it for Kim.
So you think this is just to remind us as viewers, like this is what we were supposed to do, Kim. Now we're not going to end up doing it.
Well, and how sad that is for Jimmy. You know, he's still going through the motions of it, like holding out some kind of hope that this is going to work out. And of course, we know, so it's much more sad. And I think Kim knows, too.
Yeah, some interesting spins to it at the end, near the end of this episode, as to what Kim's up to, that she doesn't just say, dude, you know, this isn't working. I got my own things I'm doing. You got your own things. Let's just say adios. She's diving back in somehow, which is pretty interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah, I thought so, too. Whatever she's doing is definitely part of their scheme. It's part of their going in the clubs and or the bars and talking about how they can change something about some. I don't know. I thought it was interesting. Okay, we see Dr. Bruckner working with Hector, and Hector's awake. We knew that from the upcomings, but that's interesting. So he has come a long way, and he has the little finger thing down. Man, was that whole Hector thing just like, that was chilling to me. Did you feel that?
Chilling on Gus's part or on Hector's
Yes.
part?
Yes. Well, Hector's chilling anyway, just his attitude and his...
Well, Mark Margolis has some awesome facial expressions for the big booty nurse. He loves that woman.
Yeah.
He's scheming too. I think that was a pretty clever scene. It made us realize, okay, this guy is not some poor feel sorry for him now invalid. He's a bastard. he's a Cad, right? He's like knocking the water over to make the nurse pick it up just so he can look at her. I mean, it makes us dislike Hector even more.
Oh, absolutely.
But his facial expressions are, God, that guy's a good actor with those, just his face. His twitching lips and stuff.
I know. And even his hand and everything, this one hand, one finger movement that he's now capable of, everything about it is just so good. And yeah, you're right. Then we go to Kim driving Jimmy. They're going to the Schweikert and Coakley, some kind of party, get together. And Jimmy is insecure in the car. He's asking her who he should talk to or whatever, and she's kind of blowing it off and laughing, and she's like, you're fine. And Jimmy is fine, and he's fun, a little loud, but everything seems to be going well. And then he goes into Kim's office, and he's counting the steps like he did in that commercial building about, and showing that this office is bigger. We also see that.
Yeah, but he exaggerates one bit more extra step for his and one less for hers. That was funny.
Yeah. And we also see that he picks up that framed picture, and it's Kim with Diane, and I think that's the same girl that she helped that day that she blew off Mesa Verde. And there's a note in the frame thanking her for believing in her and her help and all this. And then Jimmy goes out and gets in the heavy liquor and goes over to the group that's talking. And he just really kind of steamrolls them.
Yeah, he's taking shots because he's like at a, you know, he sees somebody above him and he's trying to shoot him down to his level.
Yeah, he's yes.
Jealous.
He is jealous. Well, I mean, he kind of joked about, oh, where are we going? And Schweikert tells him, you know, you're not invited, essentially. And so that was like gloves off for Jimmy then. He's like, try to humiliate him.
Employees only, Jimmy. Sorry. Like, I got, and your girl works for me now. She doesn't work for you. It's like kind of like stealing a girlfriend thing. So Jimmy takes shots at, like, Telluride is sucky, but Aspen is like Telluride on steroids.
Yeah, they keep Jimmy keeps going up in distance and price of how it's going to be. He's like, just charter a jet. And he's got an audience now as he's talking. More and more of the people are coming up, and
he's smart. He's building up this case. Like, and all the employees are like, yeah, let's do that. Like, take a jet to Aspen. Can we do that, boss? Because now Rich has to say no to all that stuff.
Right. And it makes him look like a jerk when really it's Jimmy being the jerk, getting it started. Right. And they're driving home, and Kim's far from happy. Jimmy turns on the radio, and we get to stare at their awkwardness for
She's far from happy, but she's not communicating it. That's the message, I think. Not communicating.
Yeah, Kim's not a communicator, though, I don't think. Well, obviously she is. She does it for a living, but her face says it all. Don't you think?
Yeah, but I think she's not talking to Jimmy like they used to talk. That there's that parting of communication is what the message is supposed to be for us.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, haven't you ever just been, like, too mad?
Yeah, but that's not their situation. She's like, oh, I could tell you a million reasons why you're wrong, but whatever. Let's just. I mean, that's not good. She should be telling him the million reasons. She should be vocalizing her displeasure, not just rolling her eyes.
Yeah, okay, but, you know, Jimmy knew. He knew what he was doing, and he knew what he did. He doesn't need her to tell him. He knew, and she knew, and he knows she knows. And he did it deliberately, from jealousy, like you said. And I don't know. I don't know if words are really necessary in that situation.
Well, words are necessary because she should be saying, Jimmy, this isn't making me happy anymore. Or, Jimmy, we have something here that's serious and important to me, and I want to make it right. She's not doing either of those. She's just staying quiet. That's not the right path.
Yeah, maybe.
She's not staying quiet to prevent something that would harm the relationship. She's staying quiet because she's, like, given up.
Okay, maybe I've just been married too long, because sometimes it's just like, and I don't mean like too long, but I mean too long to get that, because there's so many times when you're with somebody for a long, long time that, you know, it's just like, you know, and I know, and you know, I know, and that's it. I'm not even going to bring it up. And it's not because you don't care. It's just because words are unnecessary.
Well, that's the exact point. She doesn't, I don't think she cares. I don't think it's discretion. I think it's just like, oh, I don't care. I don't care to put the energy into this.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that has to be part of the message here, because she's starting to see all this stuff about Jimmy. Although we do get the curveball at the end that's like totally compelling. Like, what if that? If what I just said is true, if there is just like no interest anymore in Kim putting energy into this, why is she putting energy in at the end? It's interesting.
But why would she even take the case to begin with? Why wouldn't she tell Jimmy, you're going to work this out somewhere else? And not only that, well, anyway.
Well, because Lavelle Crawford Huell is a slob like all the other slobs she's helping. Just like, God, he hit the guy with a bag of freaking sandwiches, and the guy wasn't even hurt. He's going to go to jail for 2 years. That's wrong. No matter how connected he is to Jimmy, that's just another slob on the conveyor belt of Albuquerque slobs who are just getting railroaded into the system.
Well, that's a good point. That is a good point. We go to a commercial here, and this is a Walking Dead commercial. I'm not sure if you saw that, but Carol and King Ezekiel kiss?
I don't know.
You don't care?
I noticed The Walking Dead. I didn't notice that part of it. I noticed that they're
like,
saying the Rick Grimes final episodes, because he's bailing out of this train wreck, that they're trying to use that as marketing now, that you better watch because it's the end of Rick Grimes.
I know. I noticed that. I mean, they're like advertising it to get viewers. That was not good. Okay, then we're at the German housing warehouse, and the laundry truck pulls up, and the guys get in. Again, as I went back and looked, this place does look larger, but it's still just eerily similar. Really, really odd.
Well, the front entrance is very similar. And the fact that it would be very secretive if they never, ever had to leave the building they're in, and that they fly in from Germany, they're in one location, that's all they see, and they only know it's 500 miles from Denver, that's all they know. But that, I mean, that's obviously logistically impossible. They have to shuttle them between wherever they're living and the actual laundry.
Well, once they showed us, too, I think that was important. And the only reason they get a pass from this for me is because they're showing the laundry as a functioning business now. And it wasn't before. And, well, as far as we know. So I guess the scheme is that the laundry, Gus got the laundry up and functioning, and it's going to be up and functioning for years before this other thing gets set up in there.
Yeah, so they need power, and they need probably, they need some sort of activity to cover whatever activity. The guys are shooting off explosions underneath that thing. So they have to cover it somehow.
Right. But the guys are in their construction garb. They go back through like this plastic line, zippered up, cordoned off space. And they open a grate in the floor, go down to the excavated place, and it turn on the floodlights, and it is our super lab with kind of like a dirt floor and rocks to the wall and craziness.
Yeah, there are some throwbacks. I think some more cultural entertainment throwbacks by Vince Gillian and his crew. I think Big Rock Candy Mountain is the song that they're singing or playing while these guys are working away.
Right.
And Big Rock Candy Mountain was a huge part of Brother, Where Art Thou, which is a very cool Coen Brothers movie.
Absolutely.
Oh, there's another scene coming up where somebody closes the door on... Kim's paralegal closes the door on Jimmy, just like Michael Corleone does on Diane Keaton in The Godfather.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's Yeah, that's they're great at that, I think, at introducing all these little scenes that bring back other scenes. Dr. Bruckner's explaining to Gus that Hector is doing better. He's talking about his numbers on the stroke scale. Gus is making some kind of oyster dish, and he just wants to know if Hector's back. And she says that's like a philosophical question, and he's making improvements, and she won't really say that he's back. So she gets out the video camera, and she shows him the finger tap and what he's able to do, and Gus sees Hector knock over that water, and he knows. He knows the look in Hector's eyes, and he knows that Hector is now living inside this Hector shell.
Yeah, this was a very efficient and economic scene of this doctor and Gus. I like this a lot. Because as it was unfolding, I was writing my notes as it was unfolding. So I first put, is the doctor in on the evil plan of Gus? Like, she's in from Johns Hopkins. He's paying her a lot of money to do this study or grant or whatever.
Right.
Is she in on it with Gus? Like, did he sit her down and say, look, this fucking guy killed my partner, and I'm going to get even with him, and I need you to help me? But this scene proves that that's not the case.
At all.
And it was like, I thought, okay, was the cleanup nurse a setup? Like, let's get this hot nurse with the big booty to come in and tease Hector and just to taunt him to see if he has any awareness left in his head. But that wasn't true either. So this was a very efficient scene. And then that Hector just being a lech made him hateable again, which like kind of puts us on Gus's side in this.
Well, I mean, if you can take a side against, you know, this evil versus evil, Gus sees that he has come this far and he's like far enough. He tells her to go back. He's set up a whole clinic for her and it's almost done. He's like, you can go back now. And she's like, but if I continue to work with him, he may be able to walk and talk. And that's not what Gus wants. Gus wants him trapped inside this Hector shell. And you can just see the glee and the joy on his face. And it's hard to side with Gus in this because he is so evil. Even though Hector is too, I don't know.
I remember just back in Breaking Bad, Michelle and Face Off, where Walt actually, you know, spoiler alert, anybody haven't already watched it. I remember rooting for Hector big time, that good Hector's going to get this guy who's taunting him and like, take him out. Like, I was rooting for Hector way more than Gus. I was so happy Gus got his end at that episode. But now, I mean, I'm rooting for Gus in this. Gus is evil, but I like him a lot more than I like Hector.
I have a hard time, you know. I go back and forth, honestly. I mean, Hector, I mean, there's nothing to like about Hector. In this, nothing at all.
In Breaking Bad, he was a poor guy in a wheelchair that was disabled, that it was a criminal, but, and we didn't really, I don't know if we saw Salute at that point, had seen it, probably not for me to say this, but he seemed like Gus had the huge upper hand and he was just taunting this poor guy in Breaking Bad.
Right.
But now
you're
we
right.
know all that. So like Gus is like, okay, Gus, you go for him. We know how bad Hector is. But I liked
how they
illuminated that with Hector being a lech with that nurse.
Yeah, and they did it perfectly. And it was neat how Gus could see that. And he could see that Hector was there. Now, this is one of the things that I was talking about earlier, though. Hector, he like cuts his eyes. Not Hector. Gus cuts his eyes in this scene, at the end of this scene. And somebody I was reading, I cannot remember who, but one of the main ones that I read, might have been Rolling Stone. I don't know. But they said that they didn't like that. They said it was like, Gus broke the fourth wall. And first of all, I went back and watched it, and he didn't. And it just feels like they just pick these episodes apart. I thought it was just perfectly done. I don't know that they could have done that any better to show us.
Well, what do you mean he cuts his eyes?
At the end of it, when he's telling her you know, that they should temper their expectations. And he kind of cuts his eyes over, and it looks like he's
done almost reading his lines, like the scene's over. What's next?
Kind of, but not really. At first, the first time I watched it, I almost thought he looked at us. But when I went back and watched it, I didn't see that at all.
Halpert style.
Yes. Yes.
No, I didn't catch that. I didn't notice that if he did.
Well, I don't think he did at all. I don't think that was it. And just for somebody, and even if he had have broken the fourth wall in that, how great would that have been?
Would not have been good. It would not have been great.
Well, that's what they were saying, but I don't know. I mean, why not?
Because it's not how this isn't a comedy. That's not how this is written.
It's not funny. I'm not saying to do it for comedy, just because we now know that Hector.
No, I do not like that idea at all. I would not, if that was the part of the decision of the screenwriters. No, I wouldn't have liked it.
Well, okay. But I just thought it was, I don't know. I would have had a hard time finding anything wrong with that. This was such a momentous scene. This is where we find out that Hector is left for years and years and years and years and years in this shell of a body, and it's all because of what Gus orchestrated.
It's going to prompt some questions too, like why can't a don of the Mexican mafia and the Mexican cartel, so Gus pulls away this expert doctor, why can't he just get another doctor? Like, whoa, 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 I'm making some improvement here. I know orange from purple, and I know the Eiffel Tower, and I know the big booty when it comes in the room. Don't leave me in this you know, catatonic state where I'm fine, but I can't do anything. I mean, how do they resolve that? I guess we might find out, but, you know, just because Gus decides, Gus isn't any type of a relative or, you know, custodian over Hector.
Right. But from my understanding of what's going on, Gus orchestrated, obviously, this woman being there, Dr. Bruckner being there. But nobody knows that. Hector was going to be left to the doctors at this hospital. And so to everybody else and to the outside world, this was just a happy coincidence. This John Hopkins person came in and did this. So they would never, and it was supposed to be a grant, short term, and they would never know that was what was making the difference, I don't think. I think this was like a private thing.
Well, my premise still holds. Even if Gus didn't ever bring in this Johns Hopkins specialist, why doesn't Hector just say, all right, I need some cartel money here to get me on the mend. I'm you know, I want to see if I can get better.
Why doesn't Hector say it?
Well, why doesn't he communicate it somehow?
He can barely communicate, you know. I mean, he's
okay. Well, then why doesn't
finger.
Somebody just do it? Our Don, big boss, is in the hospital in Albuquerque. Let's get him some care. They don't just forget about him and leave him in the emergency room ward, you know, where he wastes away forever. Why doesn't somebody get their big Don some help?
I don't know.
Anyway, I don't know. Maybe, you know, I'm not going to criticize them because I don't know what they do to explain that. I'm sure that something will come up, though.
Well, we go back to the super lab, and this is where Ziegler's telling Mike that they've still got another blast to do, and we know that Mike doesn't like that. Then that guy, one of the guys, backs into a support beam and knocks it over, and this just sets Kai off, and he's saying that they might like living down in this hole, but he's ready to go home. And the guy's telling them, well, you're not the boss, and they start to scuffle. And then we hear Mike yell. I don't know if we've ever heard Mike yell before, but he yells at them in German.
And we also learned that they've been in there for 8 months, and they're not even halfway done.
Yes.
And they need R&R, Michelle, and not just a nurse picking up a water cup.
And this has set them back, too. This whatever's happened, yeah, they're not even half done, and now they've created even more work for themselves, and they're kind of going crazy. Then we go to the scene where Jimmy's in the back of the van with his pay-as-you-go phones. The car pulls up. He's selling phones. He starts looking at his hair in his reflection in the window, and a guy drives up, and it's an officer. Yes, officer. He has found Saul Goodman's business card on a drug dealer who got off because he was using the burner phone, and he's there to confront Saul about it. And it was funny because everywhere else, I naturally, intuitively write Jimmy as I'm going through my thing. And in this one, I started writing Saul, and I caught myself. And I don't know if it's just because it said Saul on the business card, so I was thinking about it, or if it was more than that.
Yeah, I think this is another good scene because it's very enlightening about Jimmy. Jimmy is essentially combo in this scene. He's on the corner. He's drinking his big gulp. He's selling meth. He's bored to death waiting for people to drive up and just same thing over and over and over. It's like there's no negotiation or anything. It's just like, okay, next. You want one? Next. You want one? Oh, nobody's going to come for an hour and a half. I'm standing on this corner. He's bored to death. He's selling those phones. It's a throwback to combo, I think. Like, do I really want what I got myself into here? He's just like, this isn't very glamorous.
Okay. I didn't get that at all. I just feel like he's happy to not be in that CC Mobile office throwing the ball against the wall.
I got that. He may be happy to not be throwing the ball, but he's not very happy with this alternative.
Well, this officer tells him to go to someplace nice in front of a nice grocery store, sell his phones to soccer moms. And Saul goes I did it again. I'm calling him Saul. He goes into this. He's got a permit. He collects sales tax. He has a right to be here. And the cop still wants him gone. Jimmy says no. And Jimmy says, maybe you're the problem. Maybe you're why people need these phones. And so they start doing like this kind of mildly heated exchange. And meanwhile, Huell with headphones comes walking up with his sack of sandwiches, thinking the officer's accosting Jimmy, and hits him in the head with his lunch.
Yeah, I liked how Jimmy pushes back on this cop. Like, he doesn't just let him push him around, or he doesn't just think, oh, I could avoid a lot of trouble and just like act afraid and say, okay, you're right, I'll go do the soccer mom thing. He pushes back and he's kind of lawyery with the cop.
Right.
And he's overmatching this cop. Like, he's right. I'm not doing anything illegal. You can't tell me where I can go. Like, he's right about all that. But I do have some criticism about the sandwiches bag over the head of the cop that doesn't... First of all, how does a bag of sandwiches knock down a 190, 210-pound guy, whatever he is?
There were soft drink cans in it,
too. Yeah, okay, okay. Still. How...
I guess it was shocking, you know, like if somebody hits you pretty hard. First of all, I think Huell could probably swing a feather and knock people down with his strength. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, I thought it was a little over the top, too.
You need some mass, though. Hall could swing a bag of feathers even with his strength. He's not going to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Also, how does Huell not get into trouble every minute of every day the way he overreacts at the first sign of, like, some sort of trouble that he doesn't get? He's a walking time bomb. He's walking around with his headphones on, unaware of the whole situation, and immediately jumps into violence to solve the problem.
Yeah, but I mean, look, I'm going to take up for Huell in this one, because he did not know this guy was a cop. He saw him from the back. He saw him through a fence, and he probably has had other situations where he's had to show his size, show his muscle. And
yeah, so he sees Jimmy arguing with a guy, the guy's not holding a knife on him or something. Why doesn't he just walk up and, hey, we got a problem here, and just like put his chest up to him or something?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was obviously an overreaction, but you know.
Well, that's my point. How does he not get into trouble every time? I guess maybe he does, but I don't know. That part of it was kind of... That and the bag of sandwiches knocking a guy down.
Maybe the police officer just took a dive to make it look bad.
He went down like he got hit by a bag of sandwiches.
Yeah, that may be our new thing. So then we see Huell in the back of the police car, and Jimmy's trying to speak for him. The guy, the officer knows Huell. He's arrested him 3 years ago for pickpocketing. Jimmy's like, how do you know it was him? And the officer looks at him like, really? Seriously? Jimmy says that he'll never see him out there again. You're right. I shouldn't be on this corner. Let's avoid this paperwork and let this guy go. And the officer says, no way. And drives off. Then we go back into the German housing warehouse. And, man, these guys are just like, they're just like slobs at this point, right? They're sitting around watching TV, drunk, shoeless, shirtless, with candy wrappers laying all around them.
What's wrong with that house?
Mike comes in, and Ziegler, he's trying to put on a happy face. They'll be better after nap time. Kai comes up and makes an ugly comment about it, naps for old people or whatever like you. And, you know, Ziegler's telling Mike that Ermentrout's German comes from two words, which means work plus strength, which that was kind of a cool little thing to throw in there. But Mike wants to know what's going on with the lab. Ziegler tells him that they have to build a new concrete form and straighten the rebar before they can even continue with what they were going to do. And this is where we find out that they're 8 months into it, what was supposed to take 8 months, and they realize they're not even halfway done. And the guys are going stir crazy, and they need some R&R and implied women. And Mike wants to get rid of Kai. He says, what if we send him back to Germany? And Ziegler won't have it because he says he's his best demolition guy.
It's a half measure, Michelle, just sending him back.
No, that's true. It is, isn't it? True. So that was
By the way, what happens to all these dudes after they're done with Super Lab? They just go home to Germany and that's it? Thanks, boys. Good work.
I think so, right? They're talking about how much they were going to be paid.
It's not a very efficient closing of loops, loose ends.
Well, these guys don't know anything, though. Remember? I mean, we're going to assume that they were flown in the same way that Ziegler and the French guy were flown in. They have no idea where they're at.
I guess they wouldn't have shown all those details if they wanted us to think they'd be loose ends. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I think they went a long way out of their way to make sure these guys could not come back and be a problem. Okay, then we go to this scene where Huell's talking to Jimmy about how much time they're threatening him with. And Huell's not going to do it. He says he'll leave, and Jimmy's trying to talk him into it. And Jimmy finally says, look, I can fix this. Give me a chance to fix this. Don't leave.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm a magic man.
I know. So
that is wrong, Michelle, though. The guy gets, Huell's going to get 2.5 years for hitting a guy with a bag of sandwiches. No matter what he's done previously, I know that's not a good social thing to do to hit people with sandwiches, but 2.5 years in jail for that?
Yeah, he's being railroaded, no doubt. And it's not good. It's ridiculous. But Jimmy's magic is go to Kim because he knows how she is over people being treated this way. And he tells her the whole thing. And Kim's thing is, you're selling drop phones on the street. And she's just like, she's not even, I don't know if you noticed or not, but she's not even looking at him in this scene. She's looking to the side the whole time he's talking. And that was just horrible to me.
Yeah, well, she's processing this information. It's like, what?
You're so. And she's not liking it, yeah. But Jimmy has this idea of the guy, the cop, has had a DUI previously. And so he's like got this whole, and he's also been put on desk duty because of an anger problem. And, or he assumes. And so he's got this whole, some kind of scheme he's working up in his mind that he's talking to Kim about making the cop look like he's drunk or something in court and making him look bad because of it. And Kim says she is not going to do that.
It's like a Chuck thing all over again.
Yep. Yeah. She's not going to tear down the cop, but she'll see what she can do. And she's really cold to Jimmy as he leaves. He's like, well, tell me what I can do to help. Okay. You know, and this is where you were talking about earlier, where Viola shuts the door on him. And then we come to that great scene inside the coin slot of the vending machine. Kim's wanting to discuss the case with the prosecutor, and this prosecutor, man, she is just not budging. Kim brings up all these other cases where they were not given as much time, where they had actually hurt the police officer, and this is where the the prosecutor says the only witness is a scumbag disbarred lawyer who peddles drop phones to criminals. And that shuts Kim up really quick. What did you think about that?
Well, at first I thought Kim was like going to be defensive of Jimmy, like, don't talk about my boyfriend that way. But I guess I think now that it's just pure revelation, like, holy shit, she's right. I'm dating a scumbag lawyer, ex-lawyer that's selling cell phones to criminals. But then she goes to freaking help him, so I don't know what to think.
That is exactly what I thought. When she first said that, I thought the lady was fixing to be chewed out. And then it was like this realization almost. Kim's face is great. It's like this realization came over her of that. We've talked a little bit before, too, about how everybody seems to know that they're a couple. We have to assume this woman did not know that they were a couple.
Right.
And that was kind of...
When I first saw Jimmy and Kim in episode one, pilot, season one, episode one, and they were outside smoking in the parking garage, mm-hmm. I thought, why is this hot, smart lawyer, Kim, hanging around with Saul Goodman? Like, why? What does she actually see in this guy? And it actually took me a few episodes to think, wow, or to realize, like, she actually likes Jimmy. And I know we see their history, they're in the mailroom and all that together, but I'm starting to think that now about Kim. What does she see? Why has she not already moved away from Jimmy / Saul? And how many times what can he keep doing to make her keep coming back to help him? And why is she helping him? What part of her needs to help Jimmy?
Well, that's a good question. I think that we see that Kim has like a heart for sad sex, and they've shown us that. And what kind of woman would Kim be if she left Jimmy on his year when he was suspended?
Well, you can have a heart for sad sacks that can't help themselves and a disdain for somebody who's totally capable and just throwing their opportunities away. She's not dating every slob in the courtroom that she helps. She's
helping absolutely.
Them.
You're right. But she is a good woman. She has stayed with him through this year, his hard year. And she even helped him to get off. I mean, he would have probably lost his license, period. And she, were it not for her.
Well, that's what I thought when this woman, prosecuting attorney woman, started to criticize Jimmy. Like, she doesn't know I'm dating him, but, you know, screw you. Don't talk about this person this way. She was defending him, being defensive, thinking defensively anyway. But
yeah, but then she realized, okay, maybe this is what people really think about Jimmy, because nobody who knew that.
And I'm too close to see the real.
Right.
I think that's the point. I think that's the point. Like, the scales dropped from her eyes, and she said, wow, I've given this guy way too much credit. This is actually what he really is doing. But then why is she going to help him? What's going on here, Michelle?
What is the meaning of this? I don't know, but I think we'll find out. And I trust them to let us know the answer to this. And somehow, even though I think she's doing something for Jimmy, maybe going out on a ledge, I think it might be the last thing she does.
That a few times ago.
Well, that's true.
Why do you think it's the last thing she does?
Because I think that as we round out this season, I think we may be rounding out Kim too.
Well, the timing of it all suggests that, that they have to be starting to get to the last things that these people, these two do with each other. But what particularly, specifically, do you think makes you realize this is the one of the last things she does to help Jimmy?
I think, well, only because we're seeing her realization of what she's into. And so I just think because of that, I mean, there's nothing specific about it. I just think because of that, that we're going to see, I don't know, maybe Kim does something and then she's disgusted by what she does and she realizes that Jimmy has this negative effect on her. I mean, I'm only guessing what could happen. There's nothing about it that says that's going to happen, but that would be my guess if we, you know. If I were writing the show, that's what I would do. So outside, Kim calls Huell, and she says that she has to meet up with him. And she tells Jimmy, she's like, hey, I'm going to have to call Huell, and I'm going to meet Huell, and I'm going to tell him he's going to have to go to jail, and you're going to have to back me up, and you do not let him jump bail. And Jimmy's like, if that's the only thing we can do legitimately. And she's like, what? And then Jimmy says, okay, Kim, you do your thing, I'll do mine. And she's like, Jimmy, what? Stop, you know. So she's driving away, and she makes this U-turn because she has decided something else, something different than what she was planning to do. And she goes to an office supply store and fills the buggy with office supplies. And then as she's in there, she calls Jimmy and tells him, whatever you're doing, don't do it. She has a better way.
Right. So my criticism at first of this was like, why would Kim need all this crap? She's got all these. If she's going to go to work on Huell's case, she doesn't need to go pick up highlighters and Post-its. And she's got all this crap in her office already. They don't need to. Just because she decides to take on Huell's case doesn't mean she needs to immediately go to Office Depot and get this stuff. But so that means that she's got some other plan. Like she's got to put a team of people on Huell's case or make it look like some space that doesn't have this office equipment in it has office supplies and stuff. And something new is about to happen here that we don't know yet. It has to be. She's not just shopping for extra supplies because she's going to help Huell.
Well, no. I mean, obviously. And first of all, I don't know if any office has that many pens and markers and highlighters and all that. But yeah, she has an idea in mind, and it's an idea that is going to require this, even though.
So it's clever that they put in that Kim helped the girl, and the girl congratulated her or thanked her for helping her, and she's now on the straight and narrow and thriving. And that's what Kim first suggested to Jimmy that Huell has to do. Like, he's got to serve a couple months. That's the only way that's how he gets out of this. That's the path. Trust me, I've done it with other people. And we now know that she has done it with other people and she's good at it. She can.
No, that woman didn't necessarily do jail time.
No, I know, but she had to show up in court. Like, you can't run and hide. That's what Huell wants. Huell wants to jump bail and just run like that woman did. She was not going to even go to court. Kim talked her into it. She took her medicine, whatever that medicine was. We don't actually know. We don't know that she didn't serve a month or two in jail.
No, we don't. We don't know that. But we do know that Huell's being railroaded.
Yeah.
I mean, Kim named five different cases where they didn't do them like that. This is a personal vendetta. This officer was ticked off at Jimmy/Saul, and he's just going for as hard as he can.
Yeah, but it's not the officer. It's the prosecutor that's pushing this. But, and we don't know that the woman wasn't railroaded, too, that Kim helped. I mean, I don't think that's the point. Michelle, I think the point is that her original plan was like, trust me, I know how to do this. He has to do a little bit of time to get out of this and get that's the solution. But then she realizes that that path won't work in this case with Huell. So whatever this office supply hoarding plan is, it's different. And she's doing something different and unusual for even her own path to help Jimmy and Huell. And what the heck is that? That's the interesting thing.
Well, yeah, and we don't know. But I think that it goes back to Jimmy and Kim and them pulling their hijinks. And I think that's always intrigued her. And it feels like to me this is going to be like them pulling their hijinks, which is what Jimmy was suggesting to begin with when he first came in her office. I've got some ideas on how to make him look clumsy or whatever. And, you know, I don't think that's what
smelling of alcohol. Yeah, shortcuts right. that cheat the system. Yeah, that's and it looks like Kim might be on that path.
Right.
So maybe that's what gets her into trouble and breaks them up. And, you know,
right.
But that's the interesting, compelling thing. We got to remember, Kim was like, make sure you get me the good stuff when she was talking about the medication for her arm and stuff, too. So she's got this crack in her armor that we haven't fully explored yet. That looks
well,
kind of.
Maybe. Or maybe she's just human, right? I mean, we all have our, I don't know, cracks, right? We all have our weaknesses, and maybe she's just human, and that's
well, maybe she's human. Of course she's human. But didn't it surprise you when she was pulling the scam as the South African brother and sister in the bar with Jimmy over the Moscow mules and getting people to write $5,000 checks? Like, this is Kim Wexler. This is not really Kim Wexler, but it is part of her personality.
It absolutely is Kim Wexler. It's not who she portrays herself to be, but it is her.
It's not characteristic of Kim Wexler. It's like, interesting. It doesn't fit. That's what makes it so compelling.
Well, right. I mean, it's like Kim Wexler's, I don't know, like, I don't know, just like what you might have inside that you would never let out or something. And then she, but she does it. And I don't know that we're not going to see how far she'll take that.
So, yeah. So this to me is the real something stupid that I think we ruminated about last episode. It's like something stupid done by somebody smart that makes something really change. Cause it's not that the guy hit the guy with the sandwiches. That's stupid. Stupid to think that's the something stupid.
Okay.
I think it's Kim doing something out of her character that it ends up being like pretty stupid for her. She's on top of the world now. I mean, Jimmy and her aren't doing so well, but she's doing really well. She's going to jeopardize that by whatever she does with this office supply idea.
We'll see. I hated it going off at that point because I really wanted to know more. So did you watch the upcomings for next week?
No, what's going on?
Okay. It is called Cachada. And Cachada is a place in Louisiana. So my guess is going to be that we're going to take the boys to Cachada for some R&R. But that's just a guess. The teaser says, Jimmy goes to great lengths to right a wrong as Kim pulls out all stops for a case. Mike lets his team blow off steam, and Nacho receives a visitor. So Nacho's back. Okay, in the clips, we see Jimmy on a travel bus like a greyhound. We see shots of the Dusty Super Lab. We see Ziegler is asking Mike, what about you? We see Nacho back, but he's at Hector's table. Now, you can't tell that from the scene that we see from the clip, but when I went and watched one of the next week trailers, he's actually at Hector's table in the eatery. The prosecutor is asking Kim what the plan is. Kevin from Mesa Verde is saying something like, what I'm going to ask is impossible. Nacho looks like he's about to sneak up on the cook at that eatery and do something that doesn't look nice. Jimmy says to Kim, don't worry, no one is going to know about it. Mike is saying to someone, listen to me carefully. Think about what happens if something goes wrong. And then we see Kim walking into court with three other people. It's like this team of lawyers walking in, very businesslike and serious. And that's the end.
Yeah, so that's interesting. All I got out of Cachada is it's an Indian tribe. And there's a Cachada casino in somewhere in Louisiana. With bad TripAdvisor review, Michelle. It says, don't go.
OK. okay. I thought it was like a town or something, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it might be, but I think it's an Indian tribe. There's the Coushatta Casino Resort. Unpleasant. Stay away. TripAdvisor. Hmm. But, so maybe they're on a trip to Louisiana.
That's what it sounds like. And I looked it up, and it's like a 14-hour drive from Albuquerque. So if that's true, and if they do take them, you know, by bus or whatever, that is like a long way to go. They're not playing about these guys having no idea how to even know their surroundings or where they are. So,
well, Lydia's in Houston. Her office is in Houston for, what's the name of the company? Electromotive. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So she's there. I don't know. I think Lydia's going to be the entertainment for the guys in the basement.
My guess would be no.
That's how she gets pregnant.
Is Lydia, Mike, is she entertainment for anything, Lydia?
She's entertainment for Todd. I liked Lydia. Well, I thought she was hot.
Lydia's very pretty, but she's not entertaining in that way.
Well, that was the only thing close to Louisiana that I could try to connect to what's going on in this world.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they are going to the casino or something to blow off some steam.
They're not
going to
take those guys out to a casino.
Whatever
steam that's blown off is going to be in that. They have a freaking Sallyport where they have to back the truck up and you get in and you get. They're not going to take them to a casino.
I bet they. Oh, I don't know if they take them to a casino, but I think they're going to take them out on the town.
Or bring the town into them. That's the logical things. Bring some strippers or something into the warehouse.
Okay.
And Lydia's one of those strippers, Michelle.
Oh my goodness! I don't believe that.
Lydia,
we'll
the big booty nurse.
Those women are.
Let
not
me into strippers. That writer's room, man.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that'd be good. Hey, that's an idea, Mike. You should do that. Like, you should write next week's episode, and we'll compare it to what they do.
All right, I'm on it.
Yeah, that'd be good.
All right, so 408's Coushatta ends with Wiedersheim, some German word, and winter is 10. So who knows what's going to happen, but it'll be fun finding out.
Winter as in, like, not loser?
Winner.
Winner, okay.
Winning. Yeah, winner.
Cool, okay.
Wiedersheim.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't look that far. Okay.
I'm Michelle. See you next week on 408 Coushatta, wherever the heck that is.
We'll see you next week, Mike.